Hi everyone, welcome back to Daily Gospel Exegesis, and our goal here is to try to get at the literal sense of Scripture. And we do that by looking at the Gospel reading from today's Mass. And today's reading is Luke chapter 18, verses 35 to 43. That's the Gospel reading at today's Mass, so we'll have a read of it first, and then we'll see if we can do a proper verse-by-verse exegesis of the text. As Jesus drew near to Jericho, there was a blind man sitting at the side of the road begging. When he heard the crowd going past, he asked what it was all about. And they told him that Jesus the Nazarene was passing by. So he called out, "Jesus, son of David, have pity on me." The people in front scolded him and told him to keep quiet, but he shouted all the louder, "Son of David, have pity on me." Jesus stopped and ordered them to bring the man to him, and when he came up, asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" "Sir," he replied, "let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight, your faith has saved you." And instantly his sight returned, and he followed him, praising God, and all the people who saw it gave praise to God for what had happened. So what's the context here? Jesus is moving from Galilee to Jerusalem. He's getting very close to the end of his life, and he's doing ministry along the way, speaking to the crowds, and he's now arrived in Judea. He is in the state or the region where Jerusalem is, so he's getting very close to Jerusalem. And in particular, verse 35 tells us he draws near to Jericho. Jericho is 17 miles northeast of Jerusalem. It's a major city at the time, and it's still there today. You can go and see Jericho yourself. It's actually the oldest continuously populated city in the world. So it's been populated continually without any breaks more or longer than any other city in the entire world. So it's a very important city. Now, this phrase here actually gets a lot of discussion among scholars. We would probably just brush over it. It just says, as Jesus drew near to Jericho, there was a blind man, etc. Now, but it gets a lot of discussion in terms of gospel contradictions. So you'll often hear this claim that the gospels contradict each other. And here is one place where they do appear to. So it's worth discussing. In the other gospels, this scene is there when Jesus heals the blind man. But Jesus heals the man on his way out of Jericho in the other Gospels. Whereas here in Luke, it's very clear, as Luke presents it, he's healing the blind man on the way into Jericho. So how do we resolve these two things? Most likely, the other Gospels are more chronologically correct here. The event did occur later when Jesus is coming out of Jericho. But Luke has placed it here on the way to Jericho for theological reasons. So we know that Luke does rearrange some other things in a way that does not appear to be chronological. Roughly, he is quite chronological, but if you take, for example, the incident with Mary and Martha in Bethany, which clearly occurs in the last week of his life, Luke already places that a lot earlier in his gospel. And here's another place where he moves things around. He makes it seem as though Jesus did it on his way into Jericho, when he in fact would have done it a couple of days later on his way out of Jericho. Why? What's the theological purpose for doing that? We can only speculate really as to why Luke has moved this. And here's some suggestions. And if you agree with these, you can pick one of them that suits you best, that you think seems most convincing. But as Catholics, there's no official teaching on why Luke has changed the order of events here. So one suggestion as to why Luke has placed this event earlier as Jesus comes into Jericho, maybe Luke is trying to help prepare his readers for what is going to occur in Jericho. So in Jericho, Jesus encounters Zacchaeus. So maybe there's some sort of connection here where Luke felt it was best to tell this story before the Zacchaeus story. Another option is Jesus here places it as an example of a persistent petition. Remember earlier in chapter 18, Jesus told that parable about the unjust judge. And the whole point there was keep praying, keep persisting with your petitions and God will grant them. Maybe here is an example of that, because as you'll see, the beggar is quite persistent with his petitions to Jesus. Now, that's not the best explanation, though, because it doesn't tell us why exactly Luke has placed it here rather than coming out of Jericho. So one suggestion that a lot of scholars favour is this third suggestion. Maybe because think about what has just happened in Luke. In verse 34 of Luke, just before this, in Luke 18. The apostles did not comprehend what's happened. The Greek there says that they did not comprehend what Jesus was talking about. So maybe Luke has placed the story of the blind man here straight after that in order to highlight the connection between the disciples not understanding something and this blind man. Maybe the point he's making is that the disciples are spiritually blind. This is one suggestion that scholars have come up with. We're not entirely sure, but what we do want to say is that all of these options are well within the boundaries of how history was written in that time period. We should not expect the gospel writers to write their history exactly as 21st century Westerners do. They were quite fluid with chronology. They were generally chronological, but they did move things around when they were writing history. And so they're not concerned exactly with chronological precision. So when we're reading the Bible, we should not expect it to have the same precision that we have today. So this kind of rearranging is well within the boundaries of biblical inerrancy, and it shouldn't trouble us too much. So it says there's a blind man. Now, if you're a blind man in that culture, you're probably going to be poor because you can't get work. So it's quite tragic to be blind in the first century. And also, your family might end up abandoning you as well. And it appears that that's what's happened with this man because he has no way of getting money. Now, the blind man has a name in Mark chapter 10. He's called Bartimaeus. This is blind Bartimaeus, but Luke doesn't call him anything. It's just an unnamed blind man. But apparently, it is Bartimaeus here. And he's sitting at the side of the road begging. So he's sitting there, he's hoping the people as they walk by would give him money. And we know that this particular road into Jericho was quite well travelled. There will be lots of people that travel past the beggar. Verse 36, when he heard the crowd was going past, he asked what it was all about, because he can't see who it is, he doesn't know. So he asks others to tell him. And they say, Jesus the Nazarene is passing by. You can translate that Jesus of Nazareth is passing by, but the Greek here does say Jesus the Nazarene. And that term Nazarene has messianic connotations. It basically means branch. And if you look at Luke chapter 1, when the angel Gabriel announces Jesus to Mary, that she's going to give birth to him, there's some interesting playing on words there. And so some scholars think that when the crowd here calls him the Nazarene, maybe it's a messianic title because of what the word Nazarene means in Greek. And that's what scholars speculate about. Verse 38, so the man called out. So he's hoping that Jesus would hear him over the crowd. And he says, Jesus, son of David, have pity on me. Now, for the man to say this, he must have heard of Jesus and his power. For him to petition Jesus, he must know that Jesus is a healer. And by now, Jesus has already healed multiple blind people. So the blind man is probably hoping that Jesus will do it for him as well. And he calls him son of David. That's a messianic title. In the time of Jesus, it basically means to recognize that he's the Messiah. He's the long-awaited kingly Messiah who's descended from David. So interestingly, the blind man here sees Jesus' identity more clearly even than the rest of the crowd does. He says Jesus is the Messiah. A lot of the crowd probably doesn't even recognize that. Later, the multitude calls him this same title though. In chapter 19, you'll see that a whole lot of the crowd recognizes him as the son of David. And he says, have pity on me, or have mercy on me. It's the same word, actually. So this man believes Jesus can heal him, but maybe he feels unworthy of it. That's why he says, have pity on me. It's the same as what the 10 lepers call out in chapter 17. They say, have pity on me, or have mercy on me. Verse 39, the people in front scolded him and told him to be quiet. Or more literally, they rebuked him. Why are they rebuking him? Probably because he's at the bottom of the social ladder, and they don't think he's worthy of interrupting Jesus. He's probably not well-liked in the town of Jericho. They're probably like, oh, it's that beggar yelling out again. Stop yelling out. So they really don't want him to say anything. They don't want Jesus to be distracted. Now, it's possible that it's not his own townspeople saying this. Some scholars think it's Jesus' own apostles who are telling the man, keep quiet. They're sort of acting as Jesus' bodyguards here. We know that the apostles have a habit of sending people away from Jesus when they shouldn't really do that. So in chapter 18, verse 15, they told people to keep the children away from Jesus. Remember that incident where the children want to come to Jesus, the apostles don't want them to, and Jesus says, let the children come to me. Maybe it's the apostles telling the man off again here. But he shouted all the louder, son of David, have pity on me. So he's persistent, and eventually his persistence gains him a hearing, much like, remember the parable of the unjust judge or the parable of the widow. That was just a few verses before this one. And in that parable, Jesus teaches that if you persistently present your requests, then God will hear you. That's what the man, the blind man, is doing here. Verse 40, Jesus stopped and ordered them to bring the man to him. So Jesus hears him. He asks people to help the man come over. And when he came up, he asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" This is an interesting passage, isn't it? As you would think it would be obvious what the man wants Jesus to do for him, and Jesus probably already knows. Maybe Jesus wants the man to actively ask for or participate in his healing. He doesn't just want to do it without hearing from the man. And the man says, "Sir, let me see again." Or you can translate that, "Lord, let me see again." That's quite an important title. It basically means master, although sometimes it can be in reference to God as well. Verse 42, Jesus says, "Receive your sight. Your faith has saved you." Apparently, Jesus doesn't touch him here. He just says the word, "Receive your sight." And this is a very real, concrete fulfillment of Jesus' mission mandate. Remember, in Nazareth, in the synagogue there, he gave his mission mandate. Chapter 4, verse 18, Jesus says, "I have come to bring recovery of sight to the blind." Well, here, that's exactly what he's doing. And he says to the man, "Your faith has saved you." So apparently, because the blind man acknowledged who Jesus was, and that Jesus had the power to heal him, that act of faith is what healed the man, according to Jesus. Now, that phrase, though, can also mean spiritually saved. Your faith has saved you. Maybe at this moment, Jesus heals him spiritually, forgives his sins, brings him into the kingdom. Probably a bit of both has happened here. Verse 43, instantly his sight returned and he followed him, praising God. So the blind man, Bartimaeus, he's healed on the spot and he immediately follows Jesus, apparently possibly right up until Jerusalem. He follows him. Unlike the 10 lepers, only one of them came back, the other 9 just didn't even bother. But here, this blind man comes back and follows Jesus and becomes a disciple. And then it finishes by saying, all the people who saw it gave praise to God for what had happened. Everyone gives praise to God as a result, and that indicates that this crowd recognizes that Jesus is carrying out God's work. They believe. And remember, by the time Jesus gets to Jerusalem, the crowd who's following him on Palm Sunday are basically a group of his believers, but people he's picked up on the journey who believe in him. Now, Jerusalem itself doesn't believe in him, but the crowd that comes with him into Jerusalem is a believing crowd, and we can already see this starting to form here. From here, Jesus continues to walk into Jericho. At the start of chapter 19, which we'll look at in the coming days, there's an incident with Zacchaeus in Jericho. There's no catechism references for us to look at today, so we'll finish it here. Thanks for listening. I hope you learned something new from this passage, and if you have, please share the podcast with others.